The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Text 20, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on July 21st, 1996, in Columbus, United States.
Certainly, others who were fighters on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified by the onslaught of Arjuna's arrows, and while seeing the lotus-like face of Krishna, so pleasing to the eyes, they achieved the abode of the Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, appears in this world for two missionary purposes: to deliver the faithful and to annihilate the miscreants. But because the Lord is absolute, His two different kinds of actions, although apparently different, are ultimately one and the same. His annihilation of a person like Shishupal is as auspicious as His actions for the protection of the faithful. All the warriors who fought against Arjuna, but who were able to see the lotus-like face of the Lord on the battlefield, achieve the abode of the Lord, exactly as the devotees of the Lord do. The words pleasing to the eyes of the seer are very significant. When the warriors from the other side of the battlefield saw Lord Krishna at the front, they appreciated His beauty, and their dormant instinct of love of God was awakened. Shishupal saw the Lord also, but he saw Him as his enemy, and his love was not awakened. Therefore, Shishupal achieved oneness with the Lord by merging in the impersonal glare of his body called the Brahma Jyoti. Others who were in the marginal position, being neither friends nor enemies, but slightly in love with Godhead by appreciating the beauty of His face, were at once promoted to the spiritual planets, the Vaikunthas. The Lord's personal abode is called Goloka Vrindavan, and the abodes where His plenary expansions reside are called the Vaikunthas, where the Lord is present as Narayan. The love of Godhead is dormant in every living entity, and the entire process of devotional service unto the Lord is meant for awakening this dormant eternal love of Godhead. But there are degrees of such transcendental awakening. Those whose love of God is awakened to the fullest extent go back to the Goloka Vrindavan planet in the spiritual sky, whereas persons who have awakened to love of Godhead by accident or association are transferred to the Vaikuntha planets. Essentially, there is no material difference between Goloka and Vaikuntha, but in the Vaikunthas, the Lord is served in unlimited opulence, whereas in Goloka, the Lord is served in natural affection. This love of God is awakened by the association of pure devotees of the Lord. Here the word Parthastraputa is significant. Those who saw the beautiful face of the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified first by Arjuna when he made his onslaught with arrows. The Lord appeared for the mission of diminishing the burden of the world, and Arjuna was assisting the Lord by fighting on his behalf. Arjuna personally declined to fight, and the whole instruction of the Bhagavad Gita was given to Arjuna to engage him in the fight. As a pure devotee of the Lord, Arjuna agreed to fight in preference to his own decision. And thus, Arjuna fought to assist the Lord in his mission of diminishing the burden of the world. All the activities of a pure devotee are executed on behalf of the Lord because a pure devotee of the Lord has nothing to do for his personal interest. Arjuna's killing was as good as killing by the Lord himself. As soon as Arjuna shot an arrow at an enemy, that enemy became purified of all material contaminations and become eligible to be transferred to the spiritual sky. Those warriors who appreciated the lotus feet of the Lord and saw his face at the front had their dormant love of God awakened. And thus they were transferred at once to Vaikuntha Loka, not to the impersonal state of Brahmajyoti, as was Shishupal. Shishupal died without appreciating the Lord, while others died with appreciation of the Lord. Both were transferred to the spiritual sky, but those who awakened to love of God were transferred to the planets of the transcendental sky. Uddhava seemingly lamented that his own position was less than that of the warriors of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, because they had attained to Vaikuntha, where he remained to lament the disappearance of the Lord. In this most beautiful verse, Uddhava, the very dear friend of Lord Krishna, is revealing to us the answer to a great mystery. Sometimes people object that why this most important scripture, Bhagavad Gita, was spoken in the midst of a great battle. In fact, I remember once we were giving a class at one professor's house, and this professor happened to follow a particular religious system where they advocate nonviolence, and they believe that under no circumstance, for any reason, can there ever be the resortment to violence, for it is irreligious. So on this basis, he rejected the validity of Bhagavad Gita. That for me to accept Bhagavad Gita as valid scripture, he said, Krishna should have instructed Arjuna not to fight. But the fact that Arjuna was trying to be a pacifist and not fight, and Krishna presented over 700 verses just to convince him to fight, and not only to fight, but to kill, therefore this Bhagavad Gita must be rejected. So people have trouble sometimes with this idea. Why Krishna was telling Arjuna to kill people? But here Uddhava is revealing the secret to this great mystery. First of all, we should understand that Krishna wanted to create the setting for the most important message in such a way that it would have the most realistic application to people's life. Because factually, life is a battle. And this material world is a battlefield. On one hand, within our own hearts, we have the virtues of the soul, the inclinations that want to serve God. And on the other hand, we have the power of Maya, the enemy, which wants to exploit us, which wants to cast us into a condition of great suffering, and then keep us covered in that condition. So birth after birth after birth we suffer. She wants to take us away from our own natural propensity of serving God to serve her. So this battle is taking place within the heart of all sincere souls. Those who are not so sincere, there is no battle. They just surrender to Maya. They just become atheists and say, forget God, forget the soul. Let me eat, drink, be merry, for tomorrow may never come, and let me enjoy. and their propaganda is very much strong within the world to convince everyone in this way. Everywhere you go these days, because people are very insincere spiritually, they are creating such a civilization where the vices which further obscure the qualities of the soul, and it casts one's life into terrible, terrible karmic situations of future suffering, they are considered to be the normal way of life. You eat this meat, it tastes very good. Over 1 billion sold. So if a billion people have eaten this meat, they must be right. It must be the right thing to do. People like to follow what everyone else does. So in this way, we eat meat, but we do not know that the law of karma, which is stringent and infallible, every time a cow is killed and we are partaking of the result of that murder, we must take birth, according to Manu Samhita, as a cow and be slaughtered for as many times as the hairs on the body of that cow. And how many cows are being slaughtered? How many other animals are being slaughtered? Just so that we can get some apparent nice taste, because everyone else is doing, let me also do. And illicit sex. There are so many complications and so many reactions to such an activity. And to promote a more peaceful state of mind while taking illicit sex, there is contraceptive, there is abortion. And because basically it's acceptable within society, people are thinking it must be all right. Everyone else is doing. It can't be so bad. But actually, according to the Shastra, we understand if someone is so cruel to kill the child within the womb, they have to take birth hundreds of times, not even take birth. They have to be killed within the womb and not even see the light of day for hundreds and hundreds of births. So there's so much reaction and intoxication. It is socially the conventional thing to become intoxicated. People smoking the cigarettes and drinking the alcohol, it is just a convention. If you go to any type of social function, that is everything centered around drinking and smoking and so many things like this. And if you don't do it, you are considered an outcast. And in the 60s, the young people of America were thinking, we don't want to be a part of this crazy brainwashed civilization where everyone's going to these, pretending themselves to be very sophisticated. That we called it plastic life, artificial life. And going and drinking expensive cocktails just to try to appear sociable. We reject it. So then another type of society with another type of prestige was, we will not cut our hair and put on nice greases upon our hair to make it look nice and spray it with aerosols. We'll just let it grow and never even comb it and let it just be just nice raggedy hairs. So then this became the social thing to do. And we will not put on nice conventional suits and ties and dresses, but we'll just put on all sorts of different colors, anything. Some of them put on nothing. So this became the social thing, subculture. There is the culture and the subculture. And we will not drink this fancy alcohol as a social convention. We'll just lay on the side of the road and smoke weeds. And if you didn't smoke weeds, you were an outcast in that generation. Here, smoke this weeds. And someone says, no, I don't like to do this. Oh, what's wrong with you? You are something crazy. Square is the word. Square. Anyways, in this way, everyone was just one culture or another, but all propagating intoxications. Why intoxications? Because people are just so frustrated with reality. You can choose one or another culture of how to just try to somehow block your mind with the mode of ignorance so you don't even have to really deal with the problems of life and the realities of life. And gambling, of course. People are so much fond of spending so much money in so many ways just to get some excitement in their boring lives. In this way, the whole society is propagating a way of life to take us away from God and to cast us into terrible, terrible karma consequences. It begins within our heart. There is this battle. The battle is when we want to refrain from doing these things, when we want to live according to morality, according to virtue, according to God's will. There is a battle, because everyone else practically is against you. And they're shooting so many arrows and dropping so many bombs, trying to destroy your propensity for service to God. So it is a battle. A battle within and battle without. So Krishna spoke Gita to teach us how to fight this battle, to give us the consciousness by which we can fight the battle against Maya or illusion, and stand up and fight for the truth. And if you're not willing to fight, you can never understand the truth. In this world, especially in this age of Kali Yuga, unless you're willing to fight and fight hard, you cannot come out of the miseries of birth and death. You cannot achieve devotional service to the Lord. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita in the most suitable situation to teach us all how to fight this battle against exploitation and illusion. But also we should know that the persons who are on the opposing side were essentially either demons, or they were taking the side, protecting and propagating what the demons were doing. Duryodhana, Shakuni, and these pure persons, they were exploiting devotees, they were propagating immorality and irreligion. In this way, they were very great enemies to the society. And all those soldiers who assembled to help them were a part of that. So Krishna, one of his reasons for descending into this world is to protect the devotees, exemplified by the Pandavas, but also to annihilate the miscreants, exemplified by Duryodhana and his party. So we may think that it was cruel for Krishna to have Arjuna kill all these men. But actually, when we read Uddhava's words, we understand that it was the greatest kindness. It was the most gentle form of nonviolence what Krishna and Arjuna had done on this battlefield. Nonviolence in the sense that these men would have suffered terribly birth after birth after birth for the offenses that they were committing. But because Arjuna was the representative of the Lord with a compassionate heart, his arrows were actually like the arrows of God himself, because they were sent like a messenger. And therefore, those arrows actually purified their hearts. And because Krishna was standing on that battlefield, all of the enemy soldiers, they all saw him and appreciated his beauty. And as they were laying there, apparently dying from the arrows of Arjuna, which were purifying their heart, they were simultaneously appreciating Krishna's beauty. And thus they died in appreciation from Krishna, and they all went back home, back to Godhead. Now, which is better? To live a few extra years in this world and have to suffer thousands and thousands of births of misery because of one's sinful activities, or to go back home, back to Godhead today and enjoy an eternal life of bliss and knowledge in the loving service of the Lord? Which is better? So this was not merciless. This was mercy. But sometimes spiritual mercy appears merciless on the physical plane. But we must understand the inner significance and meaning of Krishna's mercy. And it is very important what we are reading, Because one who appreciates Krishna, or who appreciates anything in relationship to Krishna, makes great spiritual progress. And this is what our movement is meant to do. It is meant to present Krishna consciousness in such a way that people will appreciate. Srila Prabhupada has said like this: if someone sees devotees and is very much unappreciative and says something terrible, like if devotees are chanting in the streets and they think, oh, it's nonsense, Hare Krishnas, why are they making so much noise bothering me again? Or if someone sees someone in a sari or in dhoti and with tilak, perhaps the shaven head, someone may look at you and say, well, you have a nice dress, to the men. Or you have all heard so many things that they say, and they all think that they're the first ones in creation that ever said such a thing. They look at their friends like they're very creative in their poetic expressions of blaspheming devotees. They say, when they see someone with shaved head, they say, why don't you get a haircut? And everyone looks and he says, ah, you see how clever I am. But for devotees, we hear it at least 100 times every day. But just the fact that they said something about Krishna, that they recognize Krishna, even in a negative way, they become purified. They become purified just by thinking of Krishna, just by seeing something in relationship with Krishna, what to speak of saying the name of Krishna. They become purified. But if someone appreciates, then they begin their spiritual life. There is a difference. If someone is negative toward us, purification is there. But if any form of appreciation for Krishna or Krishna consciousness means their spiritual life has begun. Neha vikramana sosti pratyavayo nevidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobhayat. That means either in this life or in a future life, they will be following the principles of Krishna consciousness and they will accept the path of bhakti. Guaranteed. It's too late. They appreciate it. So it is very important that we try to give an impression to people by which they appreciate. Because anything in relationship to Krishna is none different than Krishna. And it is an appreciation of Krishna. That is why Srila Prabhupada said prasad is our secret weapon. Just like Arjuna had his arrows. He was shooting people and it was purifying their hearts because those arrows were shot on the order of Krishna. These people were going back to Godhead by getting arrows in them. But they simultaneously appreciated Krishna. So similarly, prasad is something that looks so nice and smells so nice and tastes so nice and is served out so nice that people think it is so nice. And they appreciate. They appreciate the taste of prasad. And just by that appreciation, because prasad is the mercy of Krishna. The mercy of Krishna is Krishna. Prasad is none different than Krishna. When they appreciate prasad, they appreciate Krishna, that means their spiritual life is established forever in their hearts. That means the path of bhakti has begun for them. And they will continue. When exactly? That is according to their free choice, but it will continue. Or if a devotee treats someone so nicely that that person thinks, oh, these devotees are very nice. They are good people. When they ask Srila Prabhupada, how do we know who are your disciples? This was a very materialistic journalist who asked this question. Srila Prabhupada said, you will know my disciples because they are perfect gentlemen. Because devotees act, behave in such a proper and kind and gentle way to people that they appreciate them. Oh, this person is very good. When people come to our temple, if we treat them with such hospitality, with such kindness, in such a gentle and loving way, people will think, this devotee is a very good person. I have not met such a person like this. To the degree they appreciate, to that degree they actually make tremendous advancement in spiritual life. When a person leaves the temple overwhelmed with appreciation for the kindness of the devotees, that person has made so much spiritual advancement, you cannot calculate. So we should behave in this way. And whatever we may do, if we decorate the deity so nicely, someone may come to the temple and they may not even understand the philosophy how Krishna is non-different than the Archimurti. This is a high science to understand Arche Vishnu Chiladir Gurushu Naramatira Vaishnavi Jati Bhuti. The deity is not stone, the deity is Krishna. And Sri Radharani, Gornitai, they are standing before us. If someone bows down, even not knowing, but with some sense of respect, that appreciation, they make great spiritual advancement. And if we decorate them with such nice flowers and such nice alankar, decorations of jewelry and clothing, and someone says, oh, how nicely they are decorated. They don't even know who they are or what they are. But they just think, look at this, my God. So many beautiful flowers and so much jewels and so much beauty. How beautiful they are. They don't know it's Krishna, but they think, oh, whoever it is very beautiful. That appreciation, they gain such immense spiritual benefits just by that moment of saying how nice, thinking how nice. And when someone comes to the temple and it's very clean, this temple is one of the cleanest temples. At least when I come, I don't know what happens when I'm not here. Perhaps someday I will come without giving notice. But I have faith that Malati is very, she knows Prabhupada's always sitting here. So she will always keep this temple very, very clean. And when people come and they see how everything is in order, everything is very conscientiously maintained, people think, oh, these people are very conscientious. This is very clean. Just by thinking this house is clean because it's Krishna's house and it's non-different than Krishna, that person gets such tremendous spiritual progress and begins the life of devotional service just by appreciation that the house is clean, which is Krishna's temple. So in this way, if we are having nice kirtan and devotees are dancing and singing very graciously and someone comes and thinks, oh, these people are very enthusiastic, just that appreciation, their spiritual life is established. Not only spiritual life, but spiritual life on the highest platform of devotional service or bhakti is begun. They have actually come to the path of bhakti by that appreciation. Someone who appreciates the taste of your apple chutney comes right to the platform of beginning the path of bhakti. In this way, they are actually more fortunate than yogis who are sitting and performing celibacy and tapasya in so many ways, but they haven't come to the path of bhakti. Or people who are performing all sorts of moralistic activities and charitable activities in order to gain, by the grace of God, some material benefits. Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Upasana Kanda, Yoga Kanda. They have not come to the path of bhakti yet. Even though there's so much charity, so much morality, so much strictness of celibacy and other types of tapasya, so much concentration of the mind. But just to appreciate the cookies made by the devotees of Columbus, that person becomes more fortunate than all these other yogis and jnanis and karmis sitting in their institutions studying the scriptures and everything else, because they have actually come to the platform of bhakti. So this movement is to somehow instill fortune in the hearts of the unfortunate. So we must be very careful to behave, to live, to create a wonderful atmosphere that people will appreciate. Just like the art, when devotees paint beautiful pictures, if someone appreciates, this is a very nice picture, it is very beautiful, even if they don't know what it is, that appreciation for Krishna, their hearts are cleansed. They begin their spiritual life. And the greatest testimony of this we are reading today. Even demons, even terrible people, because they appreciated Krishna, at the time of death, just appreciated his beauty, that appreciation awakened love in their hearts. And because they were loving Krishna at that moment when Arjuna was shooting arrows in them, they all went back home, back to Godhead, never to see the face of anxiety or suffering for the rest of eternity. Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki jai. It is also explained here how Arjuna, because he was assisting the Lord by fighting as Krishna's representative, his presence was purifying everyone's heart, and even his arrows was purifying everyone's heart. And this is the glory of the Vaishnavas. The Vaishnavas come to this world simply for this purpose, to help the Lord with his mission. And because they come for the purpose of helping the Lord with this mission, Krishna empowers them. He actually reveals himself within the Vaishnavas. An appreciation for a devotee is a very, very great means of spiritual advancement. And service to a devotee is the most important principle for our spiritual progress. Today, Malati Devi has told me, is a very auspicious day. It is Vakreshwar Pandit's disappearance day. Vakreshwar Pandit was such a devotee of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just as Krishna purified the world through Arjuna, Krishna descends in this age of Kali Yuga as Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to purify the world through the lives and the devotion of his devotees. When the Lord descended, he brought many of his eternal associates from the spiritual world, and even his expansions, planetary expansions and incarnations descended along with Lord Chaitanya to participate in this lila of reclaiming the fallen souls. So the Gauragaudesh Deepika, written by Kavi Karnapur, the son of Shivananda Sen, he has revealed to us many of the original eternal relationships that the associates of Lord Chaitanya has with Krishna. Vakreshwar Pandit is the incarnation of Aniruddha. Aniruddha means one of the four principal expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can understand from Shastra that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead and expands himself through his Ladini Shakti as Srimati Radharani. So Radha Krishna are the original source of everything that exists. Now Krishna expands himself as Balaram, who is the first expansion within the spiritual sky of Goloka. And then Balaram expands himself into the Chaturvyuha. The Chaturvyuha, they reside on each of the four sides of Goloka Vrindavan. And they are Pradyumna, Shankarshan, Vasudev, and Aniruddha. And this Chaturvyuha, or Shankarshan, Aniruddha, Vasudev, and Aniruddha, they expand themselves as Lord Narayan, who is the king of Vaikuntha. And that Lord Narayan expands himself as a secondary Chaturvyuha, which is Shankarshan, Aniruddha, Vasudev, and Pradyumna. And they surround, again, the Vaikuntha planets. And then that Shankarshan from the and Vasudev, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, they expand themselves and into Mahavishnu within the spiritual sky. Mahavishnu expands himself as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. From Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, the lotus grows from his navel and Brahma is born. This is within each universe. Mahavishnu, from him, when he exhales, innumerable universes come from the pores and the breath of his body. Innumerable universes. And then Garbhodakshayi Vishnu incarnates from Mahavishnu into each universe. And in each universe, Brahma is born. And then that Garbhodakshayi Vishnu instructs Brahma in the science of the Vedas. Before the creation of the variegatedness of any universe is the instruction of the purpose of the universe. Tene brahmaridaya adhukavaye muyanti asuraya. The purpose of every universe is to understand what is Krishna. What is the Jivatma, the eternal servant of Krishna, the soul? What is this material nature? What is karma? What is the time factor and how it is influencing? What is the purpose of life? To go beyond the temporary pleasures and pains of this world and achieve unmotivated devotion to Krishna. That is the purpose of living within this universe. There is no other purpose. And after Brahma assists the Lord in creating the various species of life, the Lord incarnates as Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, who resides within the heart of every living being, just waiting for us to turn to him so he can direct us back home, back to Godhead, by directing us to his representatives, the spiritual masters and the Vaishnavas in the scriptures, Guru Sadhu Shastra. So we can understand how exalted this Aniruddha is. He is one of the primal expansions of the Supreme Personality of God. And that Aniruddha is incarnated as Vakreshwar Pandit. And Vakreshwar Pandit was a veritable ocean of mercy. We will speak a little briefly about this great personality. He was very famous for his dancing. In fact, he would dance and dance and dance. One time in a kirtan, he danced for 72 hours with such enthusiasm and ecstasy that he didn't even rest for a moment. 72 continuous hours he danced. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so excited to see this dancing that he himself began to sing. Actually, what happened is Vakreshwar Pandit was dancing and dancing and dancing, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so happy to see this beautiful dance of love that Vakreshwar Pandit said to Lord Chaitanya, "Oh Chandramukha, please give me 10,000 Gandharvas to sing and I will dance." Because as you know, the Gandharvas, they are the celestial singers from the heavenly planets. And they have beautiful voices. And not only that, they can sing for very long periods of time. Vakreshwar did not want one Gandharva. He wanted 10,000 Gandharvas so he could just continue singing. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so happy. He said, "You are like my wing. If I had another wing like you, certainly I would fly in the sky." And Lord Chaitanya himself would sing as Vakreshwar Pandit would dance. One time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came by the house of Devananda Pandit, who was a great scholar and a great reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Many years before this, Devananda Pandit, he had an ashram and he had many students, disciples, but he didn't have bhakti. In fact, he was tinged with the Mayavad conception. But he was very famous for reciting Bhagavatam. He would not recite any other scripture than the Bhagavatam. He was perfectly moral. His behavior was impeccable as far as virtues of living a very simple and pure life. He was very intelligent. He was very compassionate. He had so many qualities, but no bhakti. So one day when he was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, Srivas Thakur was listening to the words of Bhagavatam, and in ecstasy he began to cry when he heard the beautiful pastimes of the Lord. He began to cry. Not only did he cry, but he fell unconscious. So the disciples of Devananda Pandit, they were like their guru. They had very hard hearts in the sense that they could not understand what is devotion. They were thinking by reading Srimad Bhagavatam they will achieve pious credits and mukti. So they just picked up Srivas and just carried him and just dropped him in the ground outside. "Get him out of here. This crying is a disturbance and this fainting is also a disturbance." So they just kicked him out.
And Srivas, being very humble, gentle devotee, when he came to external consciousness, he just felt very sad and went home and didn't say anything to anyone. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is within every heart, and he is the witness of everything. So years and years later, when Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was preaching Bhagavad Dharma, according to the method within this age of Kali,